Every moment is a test. And everywhere I turn, there's fear. Can you continue to pretend to be one of them? Even as little by little, it kills the person you really are. Maybe none of us really know what darkness is waiting inside.
Transfer complete.
Hello and welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge,
this is Tyler Orton, beaming into outer space without a tether. Cam, will you be my tether?
Yes, I will, Tether Orton.
Thank you.
And we have a very special guest this week, returning after the Beginner's Guide to Star Trek, Janine Smith.
Hi.
Now, Janine, last time you were on, you came on and went through a battery of questions from us as we had made you watch 10 episodes, two of each series, and we, you know, quizzed you on what ones were the best, which ones would make you want to watch a series. And, you know, you walked away. You did not dig into any of those series.
I did not.
But since Discovery has started, you have watched all of the episodes. So you have a very, very rare position in being a guest whose first Star Trek series that they're watching is Discovery.
Oh. Yeah.
And I think that's really interesting because this show was pitched as something, I think, that would bring in new fans. You are the only person I have ever met in my life who Discovery is your first Star Trek series.
Yeah. And we should just mention we will be talking about The Wolf Inside.
Of course, yeah.
But before we get to that, Janine, why don't you just kind of give us a little bit of thought process on Discovery so far. What are you thinking about the series? Your first real one that you've
had. It is my first real one, and I'm proud to say now that I've doubled my Star Trek episode viewing.
Oh, that's right. Wow. Right.
I'm now at, 21 episodes.
Wow. Yeah.
I did not watch Discovery when it started. I had zero interest.
Right.
After we did the podcast, I sort of thought that I would venture into Voyager.
Okay.
When I had some time. And then two months ago, I started getting sort of badgered by Cameron to give Discovery a try. And so I thought, well, I got some vacation time coming up. And so
it's the holidays.
I got some time. I'd wrapped up my other shows. So I
all your other shows?
All my other shows had wrapped up.
You're like Extreme Makeover's gone into reruns.
I'm like, Extreme Makeover, done.
Real Housewives of New Jersey.
And New York, done. No, so I sat down to start watching it, I think a couple weeks ago. Mm-hmm. So that I could be caught up when it came back.
Well, don't be shy, Janine. What are your thoughts on Star Trek Discovery at this point?
Well, when I first initially started watching it, I thought, right. I really did. I thought, okay, well, I'll stick it out for the first season, and then I'm out.
Mm-hmm.
And I was listening to the podcast, and Tyler, you kept saying, like, if this is it, I'm in for 7 years. and for the first, like, three episodes, even Cameron on the podcast was like, well, I'm not yet.
All right.
And I felt the same. And mm-hmm. I was just like, okay, it's fine. I to this day have a hard time dealing with the effects.
Right.
But it was as soon as they got to
tell me about that. What is it about the effects?
It just looks really bad.
Okay. Because I've actually brought that up on the show before, how I don't like this stylized kind of look where it looks kind of cartoony to me.
Right.
Yeah. Well, to me, it almost looks, it's similar filming to like a soap opera.
Right.
Except they're in space.
Mm-hmm.
And so nothing really looks real. It all looks like it's a set or computer.
Right.
And that's hard. That was really hard for me to get past, even tonight.
It's funny because we see $200 million movies that look fake.
Right.
And so what hope does like a $5 million, $6 million TV episode have that's this much CG in an episode?
But then I look at a series like Game of Thrones, which is, you know, the budget's $6, $7 million.
Yeah.
That's around what Discovery has.
What is it? What is the secret?
I don't know. And I look at a series like Breaking Bad, the first couple seasons, I mean, they had like dirt for a budget.
Yeah.
And the show looked fantastic.
Yeah.
So yeah. I think a lot of it just has to be the kind of the visual eye of the lead director, like the producing director in these. And I'm not a fan of the cinematography myself.
Right.
I'm kind of in Janine's boat there. And I think it was kind of a misfire for instead of them going to kind of the photorealism that we see 10 years ago in Battlestar Galactica, which I thought the effects were fantastic back then. And it just seems like a step backwards in sci-fi television.
Right. But, you know, then you watch a TV series like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and this looks infinitely better.
That's true.
And it's all, like, these expensive shows, so it's like, I don't know. Yeah. It's baffling.
Janine, two questions for you. Favorite character on Discovery and favorite episode so far?
Favorite episode is it Magic to Make the Sandman go mad?
I think that was mine as well.
That was the episode that when I saw that episode, I was like, okay. And then it sort of started the ball rolling where I got more and more into it.
You're going to start your own podcast now?
Yeah. it's just purely on that episode. It's called Magic Time.
You just review that episode every single week.
Every episode
it's a time loop episode, so it makes sense.
We talk about that episode and I see how crazy my guests can get. And
Mad or Mud?
It's a game we play. My favorite character is Lorca.
Yeah.
Now, that interested me, because you were texting me when you were watching the series, and you're like, no, this is my captain.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Step out of the way, Janeway. Make way for Lorca.
What is it about Lorca that's appealed to you so much?
Okay. I like Jason Isaacs, first of all.
Right.
So
who doesn't?
I instantly was like, this guy. I just really liked, I liked the dynamic. Like, he was the first character where I really felt there was depth, too. And neither of you have seen Punisher. Right?
No. The series, no.
No. It goes really into depth with PTSD.
Right.
And so I just started this sort of finishing. That was one of my shows, which I finished was Punisher. And so I really identified, not personally, but with the PTSD. And I feel like based on
like
some
from
of
a storytelling
my knowledge
perspective.
With that show, I felt like, oh, this is a character that I can kind of understand where he's coming from.
Mm-hmm.
And
does Mr. Punisher have to take a lot of eye drops in his TV show? Like
Lorca
does?
No, but he also can keep the lights on. So definitely like right off the bat, I was like, this guy.
All right.
And I think I've defended him several times with Cameron.
Definitely. We've had back and forth text battles and everything about Lorca.
About Lorca.
Yeah.
So let's get into the episode, The Wolf Inside. This is the second part of the Mirror Universe arc that we've seen on Discovery. And Janine, it's very fortunate that we had you watch Mirror Mirror when we did the Beginner's Guide to Star Trek.
Yeah.
Because this, I mean, I'm not going to say it would have been confusing, but you get to bring in a little bit of outside knowledge at least for you know, covering the Mirror Universe in this regard.
Absolutely. Yeah. I know as soon as it sort of, you guys talked about it at the end of the podcast, which one is it? Is it Into the Forest I Go or the one after it where they actually.
Right.
And you said like, oh, the Mirror Universe. And I was like, oh. I know this. I know this. This is like cause and effect in the magic one all over again.
Right.
We want to kind of have some fun with this episode of the podcast, though. So I think we are going to call back to a previous podcast, a pair of podcasts that we did not too long ago, Cam.
Yeah.
I believe they were called All About the Andorians and Talking About Tellarites. Because, of course, we have our first appearance. If you discount the one that we had last week where there's kind of the CG Andorian that was in the wreckage of the ship.
Right.
But it's the Tellarites and the Andorians. They're back on the screen after, 12, 13-year absence since we saw them on Enterprise. They're here in the Mirror Universe, though. Lots to unpack, I think, with the Mirror Universe stuff, especially with Tyler. We're going to get to that
you?
A little later
We're
on.
We're tired of talking about you on the show,
know,
Tyler.
I know. But I think why don't we just talk about kind of the appearance in the Andorians and the Tellarites here. Janine, I first want to gauge your reaction to this. Were you all that familiar with, say, these blue aliens or these little... These swinish-looking aliens that we saw with the tusks.
No, not at all. But actually, once I saw the Andorian, I was like, oh, I think I've seen one of those.
They're pretty kind of iconic, you know.
Yeah.
They like sticking them in the movies, and they have appeared on the original series as well as Enterprise.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, I think there's no way that you can really mess up that look that they have here. Cam, what do you make of this kind of revision of them? Because there are some key differences here.
Well, you and I think we're both... a little nervous after the Klingon revamp because it was like boy, they really, you know, took all the puzzle pieces, threw them in the air, and just kind of reassembled them in an entirely different shape into something that, you know, I think we still, at least I still kind of struggle back and forth as to accepting these as the Klingons I know. I can totally follow it in terms of the storytelling, but when I look at them, I have a hard time making that, you know, mental connection.
It's, you know what? It's those TV screens back in the 60s. They just could not get the detail that, you know, the
this is what,
HD
exactly
does.
What they look like. They exactly. were just, yeah, the TV just looked a little crappier. Yeah. But I will say the Andorians I thought looked fantastic. Yeah. They just, you know, kept the very classic look and gave a little more, like, accents to the, like, sort of the eye ridges that Jeffrey Combs had a little bit.
Well, were these not, like, additional antennae? Like, they look like the eyebrows yeah. were, like, a third and fourth antennae.
Right.
So that was kind of an interesting... That was one thing that made me raise my eyebrow, so to speak.
Oh, yes.
But it wasn't something that's so drastic. I really like the makeup in just the colors that they chose, though. Mm-hmm. And, like, these were, like, deep, rich kind of blue. And the what we
yeah,
saw...
Yeah, they didn't make them, like, gunmetal blue or something.
Yeah. And to me, it just... the contrast between the white hair and the blue skin, I just dig it. I think it's, like, just a wonderful look. And we were very worried, Cam, that we'd be getting some CG antennae.
Yeah.
I think we just both had, like, a sigh of relief when we saw that these were... like legit kind of prosthetic, you know, remote control sort of practical things. So
yeah, like this, you know, character looked fantastic. I mean, I would like to see an actual Andorian character on the show because this was very much a side sort of one line character.
I suspect, you know, once we eventually get into the Prime Universe, we'll probably get.
We
some,
have to now, right?
We have to. Yeah. Yeah.
I am curious, Janine. You know, when you see an Andorian.
Walking down the street
on the way here,
minding his own business. Do they look like silly to you?
No.
Okay.
It wasn't actually till I was sitting here while you guys were talking, thinking back, that they could have looked like they could have come off to someone like me that doesn't really know as Smurfish.
Right.
Sure.
But that never,
would it be
no,
Papa,
it never crossed
Papa
my mind.
Papa Smurf or?
No, because he had a beard.
Oh, that's right.
Because, yeah, the Andorians are in the original series, and then they don't pop up on any of the other series until Enterprise. So it was
like
almost
40 years later.
We saw a brief glimpse of one on a holodeck in TNG.
But it was green.
Yeah, it looked weird. But it was almost like they were embarrassed by them and kind of unsure as to what to do with them.
Yeah.
And then they came back in Enterprise, whole hog, and, you know, they looked great. And then it was fun to see them here. But, you know, speaking of whole hog, I guess we can also talk about the Tellarites.
I mean, they're not holding back with these allusions to piggies here. They literally get, like, boar's tusks at this point. I'm a little bit more on the fence on this revision of the Tellarites than I am on the Andorians. What about you, Cam?
I thought these new Tellarites look kind of like TNG era Klingons to me.
Yeah, I see that. Yeah,
you know, they have the tusks and obviously the noses that are very like hog-like. But when I look at them, I'm like, huh, that's what I think a lot of people would have liked the Klingons to look like now.
Yeah. Did these tusk guys stand out to you, Janine? Because the thing is, Cam and I, we knew what to look for. We were like, oh, yeah, you know, we've heard, you know, that there could be some rumblings of some revisions to these very iconic classic aliens. But I don't know. Did this do anything for you?
No. I mean, to be totally honest, I don't even really remember.
Right.
What they looked like. Definitely the Andorian. I think it just was so blue and popping that I didn't even really. And unless they would have spoken then.
Right.
They were just background.
And to be fair, I mean, I think on the original series, the Tellarites were always on the lower end of sort of popping out from the crowd of TOS aliens. They just don't have the color factor. They're not as quote-unquote fun to look at.
But the reason why they are important to the franchise, though, is they are one of the charter members of the Federation. It was, the Rigelians, the Vulcans, the humans, the Andorians, and the Tellarites. So they are significant at this point. So, it was fun to me, but why don't we kind of dig into the meat of this and that there's a whole reason why they're here.
Right.
And that they're part of this rebellion that's going on here in the Mirror Universe, which I find interesting. I think there's a lot to talk about, especially with the fact that, one, Sarek, he's rocking the goatee. He's
We are so stupid. I just want to state that. But I mean, sure. No, in the sense of last week, you and I were going back and forth, like, what character do you think is going to have a goatee?
Yeah.
And none of us said Sarek.
Although I did bring it up in my blog a few days later.
You did.
So I'll say that.
But, you know, you named that Admiral, the Vulcan Admiral.
Terrell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like, Why did it, it's so, it was right in front of us. I just felt so dumb when I saw that. I was like, oh my God.
But so look, he's, you know, taking Consul as the prophet with one Voke, who's also leading this as the Fire Wolf.
Yeah.
Oh, you guys dig the nickname? Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. No, not Fire Wolf is not something you would deign to call yourself there, Janine?
I thought there'd be fire. You know, like a...
There was fire in his eyes.
Well, he followed...
And his heart.
He is... is he a torchbearer in this?
Yeah, he was a torchbearer, wasn't he?
Like he was in the Prime universe.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's a torchbearer here. I'm assuming following the light of Kalash, as he likes to call him.
Kalash, yes.
Yeah.
My name is Volk. I like prosthetics. It's great for my acting.
These poor actors.
I don't know. These teeth. I'm glad I don't have, you know, these weird teeth.
But... I met Richard Kiel, who played Jaws in the James Bond movies in Las Vegas. Actually, to Star Trek Con, and he just told me how awful the dental things he had to wear to play Jaws war, and how he would gag on them. I hope the Discovery actors aren't going through similar, you know, issues with their Klingon teeth, because that just sounds awful.
Yeah.
So,
but with regards to this, we do have this kind of rebellion going on here. So we get a lot of familiar faces, Sark, and of course Voke being the main ones. I'm interested in that. What you guys make of this rebellion. I'm going to start with Cam, though, because we kind of know what happens to this rebellion ultimately within the Mirror Universe, and I'm wondering if that saps any of the tension for you with regards to knowing the ultimate fate of this.
It didn't for me, because what mattered was more the dramatic stakes of the situation with Burnham and Tyler.
I felt the same way.
I mean, and to me, that's always been one of the key things to these Mirror Universe stories, is that I don't really care that much about the overarching, you know, political situation going on in the Mirror Universe, because it's more about how do our lead characters get out of the Mirror Universe, or what do they have to accomplish there. It's kind of like they're just kind of running into this situation, solving a side mission, and they got to get out amidst all the battle. You know, it's more like all of the, you know, the rebellion, sort of an obstacle for them to dodge.
So, Janine, for somebody who's not super, super familiar with kind of the mythology of the Mirror Universe as it carries on into the... We're in the 23rd century now. We keep visiting it into the 24th century. What did you make of kind of the rebellion storyline that we got here?
I thought it was interesting. It felt very Star Wars to me.
Right.
Yeah.
With the rebellion and everything.
Well, what does Burnham call it? She calls it an unshakable union of species, a coalition of hope. Did this give you hope?
They're the spark that's going to light the, the torch of hope or whatever.
Yeah. I felt sort of like Cam, where it's sort of like this is a side mission. Get in, get out. I don't really care what happens to them after.
Right. Well, what Cam, why don't we kind of dig into it with mythology-wise? Because what we do know from this Mirror Universe, though, is in about 10 years, Spock is still first officer aboard the USS Enterprise.
Right.
So Vulcan can, you know, do well. Meanwhile, his father is a prophet in this rebellion. So, right. I look, they've never had a great relationship, Sarek and Spock.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this is probably not... This, I guess, mirrors, so to speak, what's going on in the Prime Universe.
Yeah.
But we do know that Spock ended up, you know, enacting reforms so that by the time we get to the Mirror Universe in Deep Space Nine, the Terran Empire is gone.
Right.
It's totally whittled away. Humans are now a subjugated species.
Right.
And we have the dominant power in the galaxy is the Klingon-Cardassian Alliance.
Right.
So we do know that this rebellion... I guess is going to be successful to a certain degree, but a lot of it comes down to the implosion, I think, of the Terran Empire as a result of Spock's reforms. So,
right.
I don't know, to me, it's just kind of interesting trying to put the pieces together as I watch this and maybe where they ultimately want to go. But we do know, I mean, there weren't any rumblings of a rebellion in Mirror Mirror, which takes place 10 years later, but it's not as if...
I don't know that they were looking at the overarching political situation I know. In that episode.
Yeah, yeah. But it's just kind of interesting putting everything into context at this point. So I do get to geek out a little bit at these little tidbits here.
Well, yeah, they're able to fill in the gaps in a way that still feels like there's momentum to it. You know, when you jump into a series set 10 years before the original series, sometimes it can be tough to kind of bridge that gap and make it feel like it's an essential story to be telling. But I think they did a decent enough job.
Well, I mean, Janine, you are familiar with the Cardassians. It was Duet was the episode that Cam assigned to you to watch for Deep Space Nine, and watch. It's a very heavy episode that you assumed that I was the one that assigned it to you with regards to Kira, as well as the guy claiming to be the this kind of intern camp sort of butcher.
Yes. Yes.
And so I do wonder if the Cardassians are not part of this rebellion.
Right.
Which, you know, we never were introduced to the Cardassians until the 24th century, at least for viewers. Was this a bit of a lost opportunity to include the Cardassians in the rebellion? Or do you think Kama would have just gotten a little bit too busy? And Janine, I'm curious about this because the Cardassians were very iconic. And I think Duet is known to be a very iconic episode of Deep Space Nine. So I'm curious about both your thoughts about whether... You know, the Cardassians could have at least made a little bit of an appearance here on this. Was it Harlac? I think the name of the rebellion camp.
Yeah? Sure.
Okay.
I mean, for me, it would have been kind of exciting because I would have been like, "Oh, I know who they are."
Right.
But I, it would have felt a bit like fan service. Like, here's the Cardassians too.
Yeah, you've already got the Andorian and the Tellarite, right? And then throwing in a Cardassian.
And since they didn't really do much with the Andorian and all that.
Right.
There wasn't really a point to adding in.
Well, especially after this resistance base has been obliterated by photon torpedoes. So
right, and apparently they didn't get out. So
yeah, a little bit slow on the draw there, guys.
Well, yeah, I guess that's
especially
the end.
They figured out that, you know, the Terrans know where they are. So and one literally tells them to get the hell off the planet.
So are we saying the Firewolf went up in flames?
Ooh, I like that.
Yes.
Yeah.
No. No.
Cam, if we ever saw kind of like a revised version of the Cardassians, are you fearful of what exactly they'd want to do would the Cardassians be unrecognizable?
Well, the Cardassians had already a very busy makeup look in the 24th century on the Berman era. And so I am fearful because I look at what they did to a very simple looking species for the most part, the Klingons.
You're right.
And how complicated they are look now. And I'm just like, what would a Cardassian look like? Would we even have the ability to decipher features on its face at this, you know, if they added anything more?
I think the key with the Klingons, the ridges.
Yeah.
And we do have ridges here.
Yeah.
And with the Cardassians, it's
the spoon forehead,
as well as the neck. Yeah. So I think as long as you have those. I just wonder how much you can really accentuate those features.
Yeah.
So I'm not super fearful of the Cardassians, but I just wonder if they would, you know, make it a little too busy.
Right.
You know, and I like simple. I'm a simple man, you know. So, but okay, if we're here on the Rebel base known as Harlac,
right?
Why don't we dig into? I think what is kind of a critical story point as well as character point here with the ongoing Ash Tyler internal conflict.
Now, I am fascinated. Before we dig into this, Janine, where do you stand on Ash Tyler? You know, before you watch this episode,
I find him so bland.
Do you like the actor? I mean, I like the actor, but the character does nothing for me.
He's
I have
doing
to be honest
with what he's given,
right?
Yeah.
But it just seems
I get the script from the director.
I mean, I think he does the Klingon.
Okay. They highlight my lines.
I think he does the language incredibly well, considering he doesn't have those prosthetics.
Yeah.
But it just seems he spends a lot of time with, like, the big eyes looking over here.
He looks very solemn and, like, you know.
Yeah.
He's very good at looking tortured.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah.
And I sort of feel like every episode since he's appeared, he's going to come out and you were going to be like, oh, I get it.
Right.
That's why this guy, we've been all waiting.
Well, guys, did the writers mean for this to actually be a surprise? Or do you think they were trying to telegraph this to the audience for a long, long time? Yeah, please.
Okay, I have to say.
Yeah.
Someone who's never seen sort of Star Trek, the series.
Right, never
that,
gone through another series.
Never gone through. I watched this. I thought, oh, this guy's been saved. This is lovely. He's got, you know, PTSD, all that. When you guys said on the podcast about this fan theory that everybody knows and this is no secret, it blew my mind.
Oh, wow.
If I hadn't have listened to the podcast and had have watched this episode where they do the big reveal, I would have.
You never would have.
Audibly.
Okay. So we never ruined it.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Well, nice to know the podcast ruins the experience for new viewers.
I kept thinking, oh, it is probably like that fan theory that is right.
Right.
But you know, I didn't see it at all coming. Yeah.
For the longest time, I was thinking like, no, it seems too obvious. My assumption was it's the same actor playing both Folk as well as Tyler. And I honestly thought it was misdirection. I thought it was kind of a red herring that they wanted us to chase because I thought it was too obvious. And
to me, it's more the behind the scenes stuff that made it much more obvious to me. I think maybe than it was just going off the evidence of what was on screen.
Sure.
It was the fact that, you know, I don't know if you knew this, Janine, but like the actor who plays Voke is a fake name. And if you look up his IMDb profile, he only has one credit, and it's Star Trek Discovery.
I did look it up.
Yeah, and so that's where people suddenly went like, well, hold on.
No, see, I was just like, good for him.
didn't happen with me, though. I was like,
they really like me.
I remember watching the premiere, and I really liked the character of Volk. I thought it was a great performance, and I was like, who is this actor? I'm so curious. And I look at his IMDb, it's like, I've never heard of him.
Right.
Yeah. He has zero credits. This is, a find for these people here. And there's all this other weird behind-the-scenes stuff when they're announcing new characters.
Yeah.
And originally, Janine, Cam, I'm trying to keep it straight here, but they announced that Shahzad Latif, the actor who plays Tyler, he was originally cast as Cole. And then a couple weeks or months into filming, they said, no, he's no longer going to be playing Cole. He's playing an entirely different character named Ash Tyler. And a lot of us are going like, okay.
Yeah.
It was just all this weird stuff going on behind the scenes. I was like, well, they must have liked the actor, and that's why they're keeping him all around and giving him a bigger role. And
right.
But, Cam, the weird thing is we were in Vegas, and there was that big kind of unveiling of the Star Trek Discovery panel, and there were banners out there for all the main characters, and there's one for Tyler, and it had, like, his face there. And there's one for this character we'd never heard of called Voke.
Right.
And it's just like, why is Voke getting like a banner? There's just all these like weird things going on behind the scenes and what they're trying to telegraph to us. And I don't know. To me, it's just kind of, it was ripe for conspiracy theories. And, now we have kind of the fruition of it all. It's come to fruition here. Yeah. Why don't we dive in?
And I was wrong. I thought it was going to be Lorca's Tribble that gave him away.
Oh, right.
I thought that was, the Chekhov's gun. That Tribble's going to go off at some point. It's going to be when Ash Tyler walks into the room. So, and I was wrong.
Why would that be?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because Tribbles are the worst enemy of the Klingon Empire. Klingons hate Tribbles, and Tribbles always go nuts around a Klingon.
If a Klingon walks into a room and a Tribble's there, the Tribble's just going to, fly off the handle.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And, this was established, in the original series. And so I was under the belief that was why that Tribble was in Lorca's office. Because otherwise, I'm like, this just feels like cheap fan service. Like, this Tribble has to serve a purpose.
Yeah. And it was.
may have been.
But let's bite into the meat of it, though, because we do have this confrontation between Voke as well as Tyler. He's looking at himself in the mirror. He's recognizing the alien version of himself. We've never actually seen anything like this in Star Trek, which is actually kind of a cool thing.
Yeah, I love this.
And just him, as much as we maybe kind of chuckled at some of the reaction shots that Tyler was having.
I was chuckling, but I was enjoying them.
Yeah.
Like, I wasn't making fun of them.
No. But it was fun to... Janine's eyebrows.
I was making fun of them.
Okay. But we haven't seen anything like this in Star Trek before, and it was kind of cool to see him, slowly realize what the hell's going on, because that's been his internal conflict for the last couple episodes, where he just has no sense of himself.
Yeah.
And when he suddenly realizes that everything that he had been programmed to believe is just like this fallacy, he goes and grabs a sword and starts fighting against, the mirror version of himself, because he's so horrified that the mirror version of himself isn't like this zealot like he is.
Yeah.
And that's the real great thing that I do love this with Voke, is that once he realizes he is Voke, he's not like, you know what? I really like this Burnham girl, and the Federation's not so bad.
Tilly's pretty funny.
Yeah, this is not, why don't I go make peace? He's like, no, wait, I've kind of lost my way here. I am a religious zealot. I believe in the supremacy of the Klingons. We need to preserve it.
Yeah.
I need to fight against anybody who's not with me on this mission. And I like how it actually reaffirms a character of Voke that we met, you know, so many episodes ago.
Yeah.
I think this is actually like worth the payoff. Even though Camus and I, we've kind of joked about, you know, how they've really been stringing the storyline out a long time. I think it was kind of worth it when we see what actually, you know, came out here.
Yeah, I really like the transition. Like, I thought it might play as cheap.
Yeah.
And just kind of like...
That was my big fear.
And I genuinely thought it was going to be this struggle of him deciding, like, am I Voke? Am I Tyler? I know. I love the Discovery crew. You know, like, I found a home here that
Tribbles aren't so bad.
I thought there might be more of a debate about him being so, like, such a loner and alone as a Klingon, making the decision that he'd found something better. But it doesn't, at least at the moment, look like that's the path they're going to take, which, you know, this is, it's different. Like, I haven't seen this. And I actually was surprised that Laurel didn't play more of a role in the transition.
Yeah, based on last week's episode, Janine, did you think, I thought it was pretty much guaranteed that Laurel would have been key to this. But I guess maybe she did serve her purpose in Despite Yourself, and that she did the Manchurian thingamajig, and we slowly saw him come out of his shell to the point that he's murdering Dr. Culbert.
Yeah. Well, I just liked how it was suddenly he was facing, you know, the human, quote unquote, him, was facing the Klingon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Him. And that's what made him sort of snap.
Right.
And I really enjoyed how quickly it happened, but I was also really surprised. I thought we'd see a few more episodes of sort of him fighting within him. But what I did think was interesting is when he blew, like he blew.
Right.
And I sort of was wondering, I was like, well, what was their long con? Do you know, like, if he's aware of sort of the mission and why they're getting on Discovery and why they're doing all this, why he was so quick to be like, man, I hate you all and I'm going to, like, he didn't sort of play it out as Ash Tyler to keep getting that information. Well, and
we still don't know what the plan was. Yeah,
we don't, like, because we debated a lot about, like, what Laurel is up to. Mm-hmm. And I actually, as much as I like Laurel as a character, I've been thinking about this last week, though, in that... It's very difficult to 100% get behind a character if you don't know or understand what their motivation is.
Yeah.
And as cool as Laurel is, I don't for the life of me understand her motivation.
Right.
And I'm always questioning it, especially in an episode like Into the Forest I Go, where I'm like, wait, is she playing the Admiral or is she playing Cole? Yeah. Or did her plan just get blown up and now she's just scrambling? Like, I never had a clue here. It seems as if her motivation is to always be the champion of Voke.
Right.
You know, but now, and Janine, you bring up a very good point. I don't understand what this plan was.
Yeah.
You know, from the get-go. Like,
I mean, I can understand it's an experimental ship, the Discovery, with a spore drive. So the Klingons might want that technology, but it still doesn't quite line up.
Well, okay, why don't we just go through it? So what we know happens is Lorca is at a starbase.
Yeah.
His shuttle is captured by Klingons. He's transported onto a prison ship that Laurel is captaining.
Yeah.
And within there is Ash Tyler, aka Voke, and he makes friends with Lorca, who says, I want you on my ship.
Right.
And so then he's planted on the Discovery. And is it because the Klingons... I think we do know that the Klingons are aware that the Discovery has this very powerful spore drive.
Yeah.
But at the point that Voke actually agrees to get transformed, the Klingons actually don't know that.
Right.
So it makes me think, like, this is kind of like...
And how did they know that, like, Lorca would be on this shuttle that they could capture for their prison ship and have him there?
They must have been, like, tracking the captain's moves and said, hey, this is our... That's my assumption.
Sure. Yeah.
But it really... And I think we've maybe alluded to it before, but it seems like Heath Ledger-esque kind of planning ahead here.
It's all part of the plan.
Jesus.
Well, and my wondering was, how much did Mudd know?
I don't think he knew anything.
No, I think
because
he was
wouldn't you know? Like, he's brought back.
I think Mudd is so, like, obsessed with himself that he's not really paying attention to sort of the machinations of people around him.
Yeah,
I don't think he really cares unless he can somehow profit from it in some way or something.
It's kind of like me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
makes sense.
You're not profiting very much off this, though.
Not off the podcast. Yeah.
The blogs, though.
But, okay, so So far, we're still kind of questioning this plan. I think, honestly, what the writers really wanted to do is have Burnham deal with something pretty heavy.
Right.
And I think we should discuss that, because we do have the confrontation between Burnham and Volk slash Tyler within the quarters, where there's a certain point where I'm just like, okay, they're kind of going around in circles.
Yeah.
You know, but I did like what we ended up getting here. And I wondered if it was like... My big fear is like Burnham was going to kind of cave.
Yes.
You know, and that did not happen.
I was worried he was going to go back into Tyler mode and just like somehow explain this in some way that was really dumb and undercut how smart a character like Burnham is.
Yeah.
I just want to say, though, I really loved mopey Tyler after, you know, he had his little outburst and then he's like leaving that planet and he just looks so pitiful.
Yeah.
His head down.
He's like, oh, I'm sorry, guys.
It was when he beamed back up and he was on the transporter pad and Burnham's like in my quarters now and he just had the biggest Eeyore face on. I was just like, oh, he's in trouble.
He's like George Michael on Arrested Development, like the head down and the Peanuts music.
Snoopy music, So, so we're dealing with kind of the heavy stuff on Burnham. Is she, first of all, is it Volk? Do you know what I'm saying? That like is having this discussion with her, or is it still kind of a Tyler Volk amalgam as this Volk personality is slowly crawling out?
Well, we saw the transition.
Right.
Because it was Tyler, for sure, because he was saying, I felt this, and I felt someone inside.
You're my tether, and all that.
And then he did the weird bulgy eye thing, and then he was Volk.
Yes.
Because
I'd say it's entirely
his
Volk,
face sort of changed, and the way he spoke was changed. It wasn't, when he speaks as Tyler, he sounds like more of a victim.
And so
classic Tyler.
Right.
And then when he turned into Volk, he died.
Dare you? How dare you? She always does this to me, Cam.
And when he did the eye thing and turned into Volk, and there was a lot more confidence behind what he was saying and his words. And so I think it was like a quick boom transition and Volk just took over.
Yeah. But I dug it. You know, how willing was she to, you know, at a certain point, if somebody who seems very dangerous is, you know, moving around and I've got a phaser pointed at him, I don't necessarily need to have it on vaporize, but why not stun him?
I would have stunned him in a second.
I always like shoot him in the knees.
Sure.
You know, just get him. Yeah. I don't want someone circling me.
No.
That is noticeably stronger and bigger than me. I'm going to do something to get myself on that higher level.
Maybe she felt a little cocky after seeing him get taken down by the other Volk. She's like, yeah, you know what? I've taken it down Klingons on my own. I'm not too worried about this guy.
And then he just moped away.
Yeah. She did already fight Volk once before.
And Takuvma.
Yeah. So.
And Cole.
Yeah. She's pretty badass when it comes to handling
them. She could
probably
take down
Tyler. Yeah. But you know what? He was pulling at her heartstrings to a certain degree.
It's true.
So
it's true.
I buy that.
Well, that's what I'm really curious about is how you guys felt about that sudden love story.
I mean, yeah. That kind of came to fruition in Magic to make the sanest man go mad.
It's slowly, and it's slowly building, but suddenly, you kind of like, I loved you.
Oh no! Wait. Was it?
You know, you're right. It was Magic to make the Well, they were kind of flirting a little earlier, but that was the episode that really hammered it down.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And then you kind of got moments in like CV Pacem Parabellum and Into the Forest I Go.
Right.
But this episode in particular really ramped up the relationship.
I've seen it done worse in other series.
Sure.
I'll give it a pass here.
Yeah, I don't think it was a triumphant home run for the Discovery staff of writing the next great Star Trek romance.
It was no Worf and Jadzia.
No. Yeah. No, definitely not. I mean, it functioned for what it needed to do, but I don't know. I'm curious, Janine, like, how do you feel about the character of Burnham? Because to me, there's something still a little bit aloof about her in her interactions with, especially, like, you know, this character, Ash Tyler. Mm. Like, I don't quite buy her as like surrendering kind of to love in the sense that I think I need to.
Right. Well, and especially since it happened to me, it happened so quickly.
Right.
I was like, we didn't really earn this emotional moment yet. And so that's, I'm intrigued by her.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was definitely this I felt was a confusing character moment. But where she just fell so quickly for this guy who really is bland.
Well, do you think that's the problem too? Is that maybe both characters are a little bit aloof, like there's no kind of give and take. It's like they're both fairly aloof on their own.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so it would work in a real world situation, but to watch it as a TV viewer, it's hard to kind of get swept up in it, because usually in sort of the big romances of TV or film or whatever, they're fairly overdramatic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I wonder if that's maybe part of the problem.
I think so. You know, that makes
sense. Or even if she remained aloof and he came in and was just this real dynamic, sexy man, that there was just something about him that even maybe, you know, Tilly was kind of like, hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, they sort of hinted that she was a little. But there was just, he feels so flat.
Right.
That with a character like Burnham, who's such a strong, independent woman, to suddenly just be in this position.
You know what I think would have helped me a little bit, actually, is maybe seeing a couple scenes just sprinkled throughout, you know, these past few episodes where we saw Tyler a little more on friendly terms with the rest of the crew. It's the fact that he also felt isolated in a weird way.
Yeah. I mean, he had fun shooting people with Lorca.
Yeah, we got like that one scene, and not much of a relationship after that.
What kind of relationship does he have with Stamets?
None.
Yeah.
Stamets is busy.
None.
We know his relationship with Culber.
Well.
It bugs me because, like, I was Googling this actor.
I like how you left Saru off the list, by the way.
But I was Googling this actor after I saw him as Voke, you know, like way back in September. I like the actor. I just, this is kind of disappointing that this character falls flat for me. Although now, are we getting the whole Grant Ward sort of thing?
That's what I was thinking. I'm sure that's a reference that at this point, no one understands what you're talking about. Grant Ward was a character on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I don't know why we keep referencing that show on this podcast.
It's not a good show.
No, I mean, it's gotten better over the years. But he was a character, season one, he was, you know, this sort of hidden agent. And then he became like the villain of the series and, you know, was carried over like the next two seasons at least. So I think into season three. You know, I guess that kind of segs into the question of, is that the destiny of the Ash Tyler character? Like, is he going to be an ongoing, I don't know, villain or some anti-hero or some sort of character that keeps, maybe isn't a regular, but recurs throughout the next period of time on the series?
I just don't know. I my sense is his arc will come to an end before the end of the season. And so do we really want to string this character out? You know, but what I'm looking forward to is watching this guy play evil Tyler, you know, for the next couple episodes at the very least. What did you guys make of the whole execution scene? Especially, he did give his last lines, I think, something about Kalis, you know, obviously.
It's always about Kalis.
Did you guys buy that this was going to be the last of him? Because as soon as I saw her transport, she's like, oh no, let me handle the controls. And then she transported him. And then they didn't cut to him in space. It's just like, yeah, he's probably in like a cargo bay. But then a few beats later, they do cut to him in space.
I knew exactly what was going to happen for this one.
Okay.
I may have been wrong about some of my past predictions, but this one I had.
Like, you figured that
Discovery was going to get him.
Discovery's going to get him. Yeah. Okay.
No, I thought he was going to die. After Dr. Culver, I was like, oh, wow, they're doing it again.
But to me, it was just like from a just a filmmaking perspective, it was a weird way to do away with your, like, this would be the first main character to actually die. We've had some, you know, like,
dare you? Landry was the star of the show.
Yeah, right. No, but we've had, Giorgio and Culper were the two most significant characters to die so far, but they're not in the main credits. Well, unless Michelle Yeoh is a special guest star.
I think.
But she's still not a regular.
Right.
So it just would have been a weird way to dispatch with a regular character. And so that's why I was just like, well, how's this going to happen?
Especially this sort of early into the second half of the season.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, if they're going to kill him, I feel like maybe they don't want to do it in the final episode just because, you know, TV shows like to kind of surprise you every now and again nowadays. But maybe like the episode, you know, the penultimate episode of the season or something.
But there are questions about like the future of, you know, one Ash Tyler, and as well as Lorca. Like, Cam and I don't necessarily believe Lorca's making it into season two. He might be in prison, or
he looked great in this episode.
I just think that Lorca's arc is going to come to an end at the end of this season as well. Janine, do you imagine a season two with both Lorca and Tyler in the main credits?
I mean, I have to hope that Lorca's going to make it. So Lorca,
Okay.
I believe.
I'm
100% behind my captain.
I will say this episode gave me a little more hope in Lorca. In, you know, he has a conversation scene late in the episode with Burnham where he's talking about, you know, you and I have to get out of here. And it was something like, what is going on with this character? Because suddenly I'm like, you know, this whole series has been set up as like, Lorca's your kind of your possible villain. You know, he was made to look like a very obvious, at least to me, shadowy figure that was going to be revealed as a villain. And now we've seen, you know, Ash Tyler comes out as Voke. And it's like, was Lorca like a red herring the whole time just to distract us? Is Lorca going to be the one with the tight bond with Burnham at the end of the season? Whereas, you know, Ash Tyler's out the, you know, out the door.
Out the airlock.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a tough one because, again, I'll go back to the Laurel example. For the last three episodes, I have not understood Lorca's motivation.
Right.
That, like, we do know that he, if you look closely, it looks as if he's the one responsible for sending them into this universe. Now he's very much on board with trying to get them back. Or
I think the Agonizer booth probably, yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Caused an epiphany.
That'd do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, again, like, even during, like, the previouslys, we just saw, like, reaction shots, you know, previously on Star Trek Discovery. We saw reaction shots from Lorca as soon as he kind of understood, you know, what was going on. And he looked pained to be in this mirror universe.
Yeah.
So I...
Is Lorca... from another universe?
I would like to think the Lorca that we've been following, and I know there's a lot of other fan theories that the Lorca here.
Jimmy like dives out the window.
No, but I mean, there's some people postulating that the Lorca here is actually originally from the Mirror Universe, and you know, and that's why he's missing in this Mirror Universe.
Yeah.
But I would like to think that the Lorca that we've been viewing for the last, you know, like 11 episodes, it's in fact the guy who went through the destruction of a ship and lost all his crew, and he's dealing with PTSD, like, legitimately.
And maybe he wanted to go to a different universe to escape all of the issues he had in the Prime universe, where, you know, he's obviously going to have his ship taken away from him.
Yes. And I think that's key. You know, and I think that's a far more, you know, interesting character conflict than they figured out I'm from a different universe,
right?
You know, because it's very clear that he does not want to go get that Medal of Commendation,
right?
Starbase 36 or whatever. So he makes a beeline for it because I think he knows they're taking the ship away from this guy who's still not recovered from that very traumatic experience he went through.
I feel like a lot of the answers to what is going on with this universe and this character are going to be answered by Stamets. That's my prediction. Because this is a character that's been put basically into coma mode. And he's the one with the revelations. You know, he's been speaking in basically riddles, saying things like, you know, the forest is dark, you know, in this episode. And I feel like this is the character they've had to sideline because he's the one who knows answers. There was a brief glimpse at the end of the episode where we see, like, is it inside the mycelial network?
Yes.
Yeah, where there's another Stamets that pops up.
Well, it's mirror Stamets.
Yes. It's like, it's time to go to work.
For that one sentence that we got from him, what do you guys make of mirror Stamets at this point? Janine, I'll start with you.
I mean, he seemed the same.
That was my take as well.
But that was...
Doesn't Saru kind of seem the same?
Saru seems the same, and also the Vulcan.
Detmer? Or,
Sarek.
Sarek seemed exactly the same to me.
Yeah,
and
I would
so
agree.
Yeah, I was just like, oh, but so you know, your mirror reflection is you.
Yeah, well, I mean, we did see in other episodes of Mirror Universe that it wasn't always extreme examples.
Yeah, I think in DS9 the most extreme was probably Bashir.
Kira was fairly extreme.
Kira, yeah. probably Quark.
Yeah,
Quark was kind of like this groveling little.
But
guy
others
who...
like, you know, like say like Garak was pretty close. It's just twisted the other way.
The Garak of the Mirror Universe is pretty lame.
He was lame, but you could understand how Prime Garak would be like that.
I would say maybe Smiley would be a good example of like, yeah, Chief O'Brien seems to be a good dude no matter what universe he's in.
Yeah,
so it just seems as if a lot of these characters that we've encountered so far, they're not exactly chewing the scenery like we saw William Shatner doing as the barbarian.
The pirate outfit.
Yeah.
So.
Just like screaming incoherently.
Yeah.
I mean, Janine, you know, where do you, you know, you've been following the Stamets storyline, which has been a very odd storyline for a Star Trek character. There's no character with a story like Stamets.
Yeah.
Where do you see this character potentially even going? Because I'm not even sure.
I don't know. Like, is he just going to go back to like, how he was?
Yeah.
Or is he going to become, you know, this prolific guy that can sort of see everything? And he has more of a, kind of like he is now, but except he's speaking in riddles.
Like an ascension to a different type of being.
Yeah. Like a higher, he's of a higher being that can sort of knows the future and can semi-predict it.
Yeah.
But
I mean, I feel like this character is going to stick with the show because so far we're like, we've already like written off a lot of our cast members.
Well, yeah, sure. We've invested a lot in him because we've seen him go through so much.
Yes.
That we can't just kill him off and be like, well, there we go. That explains why the spore drive's not around.
Or have him be like, you know, kind of like the Traveler on TNG, just being like, well, I'm off to explore other cosmos. Yeah. You know, good luck, guys. You know, like no one wants to see that either.
No.
And now we have, you know, Stamets has become a very tragic character with the death of Dr. Culber. And I know, Janine, you were very upset by the death of Culber.
I was shocked.
I think everyone was, but yeah.
I was shocked by that. I audibly gasped alone in my living room.
Right. And you know, now we have this, you know, this Stamets who, when he comes back, is going to have a lot of baggage. And that's the sort of thing that is going to make a character like that very interesting to follow in, you know, season two and beyond. And so I think this character's here for the long haul. I'm just not sure, like, what he is.
I would feel cheated if he just goes back to the prickly Stamets that we met in episode 3. And that, I like that character, but it's like he's obviously on a journey here.
All these characters are on journeys, it seems like, for the most part, except Saru.
that's true. But well, let's talk maybe a little bit about Tilly. Like, did she not seem like more assured of herself than we've ever seen before?
Definitely.
Yeah. So,
yeah. She definitely took control.
She's even schmoozing her commanding officer for a recommendation into the command program.
And you know, past Star Trek series would have milked like the quirks of Tilly for like 4 or 5 seasons before they did anything with her.
Yeah.
You know, we've seen in what, like 11 episodes, like Tilly's already journeyed quite a ways.
Yeah. She's even commanding her own ship.
Yeah.
In the Mirror Universe.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And so, you know, I love that the show is doing that with its characters. But guys, what about Saru?
Janine, I was hoping maybe Mir Saru would be this dynamic sort of fella. He's even kind of more, I don't know, like feckless than the Saru that we know in the Prime Universe.
That was a very uncomfortable bath scene.
That was weird.
Yeah.
That was very bizarre.
I know what I'm doing for cosplay. Yeah.
But Janine, you know, you yourself have said to me, you know, you're not the biggest fan of Saru.
No.
And why is that?
He just doesn't really do anything. And he just, the only time I really find him useful, and that's using the term loosely, is when he's just going about his day and then his threat gangula go up. And then you're kind of like, ooh, something interesting's happening. Like when Ash Tyler walked in that one time.
Yeah.
Or when it went up with Burnham.
Right.
And then later in the episode, it didn't. Those are the only times I find him at all beneficial.
But I would say Choose Your Pain was a good showcase for...
Where he was in command?
When he was in command. I think that was a good showcase for him. But since then, we got a really weak episode in CV Pac and Parabellum.
Yeah.
And he just kind of... He's been on the sidelines. And the disappointment here is like, you've got everything going for him. You've got a fantastic actor in Doug Jones. You've got this really cool look for the alien. Like he's, like 7'5" and... He's got threat ganglia, as you mentioned.
And we've seen like Star Trek try to create, you know, new aliens over the years. And, you know, sometimes they've struggled. And to me, like the Kelpians look great.
Yeah.
I mean, we haven't seen any more than Saru, but Saru looks great.
Yeah.
You know, and he's very like, instantly recognizable. So they've got everything going for them, except they just haven't nailed down like what this character's...
Like what makes him compelling?
Yeah, like what is this character's story?
They tried to do that with C.V. Pockham in that like I've always lived every single moment of
my
life.
Why is that the episode title we have to say the most, it seems like?
But it's like he laid it all out. He's like, I've always lived my life in fear. And I don't know if the viewers cared so much.
But like, where do you go from there?
Yeah. It's like,
it was fun. When he said that, I was like, I'm Saru.
Yeah.
Like, I got it when he explained, like, that he's threatened by things and the anxiety and everything.
Yeah.
And then I thought, like, that episode was pretty boring.
Right.
Except the running. But I thought after that we'd have this dynamic shift because it was almost like an epiphany of having him say that and be like, this is who I am. This is my species.
Right.
And that, you know, I don't know if Burnham or someone would help him sort of identify and move forward, but there's been nothing.
Yeah. What we saw with like Seven of Nine or Data, that, you know, they were trying to understand what it meant to be human. And so they were exposed to different elements of humanity, like learning comedy from Joe Piscopo. You know, we got to see them learn these various aspects of what makes humanity. I'm not seeing Saru tackling sort of even smaller instances of things that scare him. Like, I'm not seeing this character try to better himself or try to change in any way. He's always just kind of in the same situation.
Now, in all fairness,
yes,
we're on episode 11.
It's true.
So
look how far some of the others have come.
I know. And I think maybe that's why we're raising alarm bells here.
It's like everyone's running past him, basically. And he's the fastest runner.
Yeah. I just think the issue was, I think C.V. Packham was supposed to be a turning point for that character.
Yeah.
And it was a weak episode, and we really haven't seen anything really come out of that experience. So, mind you, there's a lot that's gone on, you know, between Into the Forest I Go, as well as this jaunt into the Mirror Universe. So, I hold out hope. I just wonder if season two is going to be where we get a lot more of a breakout character.
Because we've only got 4 episodes left in season 1 of Discovery. I mean, do you really think we're going to get a Saru standalone episode?
We might. Well, no, he's already gotten Choose Your Pain and C.V. Packham.
Yeah.
So, no.
Yeah, that's the way I feel, too. I think Stamets is going to have an episode built around him coming up.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes.
And there is rumors of an all Klingon episode.
Okay.
So,
subtitles galore.
Yeah. You know, and that may be like kind of the Ash Tyler-centric episode.
Right.
Coming up. Yeah. You know, so that knocks off potentially 2 episodes. We have a wrap-up episode. I don't think Saru's getting another showcase until season 2.
But I would say he doesn't need a showcase. What he needs are some beats. He needs some moments within the remaining 4 episodes.
Yeah.
That's all I need from him for me to kind of rethink this character. I like everything that they've set up with him. I just, it hasn't paid dividends at this point.
He's the only character, that hasn't had those growth moments.
Right.
Huh. That you sort of look at, okay, let's look at episode 11. Let's look at them in episode, 3.
Yeah.
And we see a growth. He's the only one that we're like, nah, he's the same.
So, guys, before we're going to go into like wrap-up mode pretty soon, but let's talk a little bit about the Emperor.
Yes, I was going to say. Yeah. We had to kind of end on that one.
Because Cam, you and I, we discussed this last week, our theory that the Emperor, and it was using the masculine use of that noun there.
I think that was too...
Throw us off?
Throw people off.
Yeah, but I mean, I think we were both thinking, like, who else could it be? I guess there are some fan theories that it was Harry Mudd.
Yeah, a lot of fans thought it would be Harry Mudd. And, you know, Harry, if you look at, like, the episode I, Mudd, kind of wants to be, like, the king of all these robot people.
Yeah.
So you can understand why a character like that might be the Emperor of the Mirror Universe. It's sort of this ironic joke of the character. And when I read that, I was like, huh, that actually makes sense. But it's still... Just knowing the baggage that comes with the character of Georgiou and her connection to Burnham, it just doesn't make sense any other way.
Yeah. And are we looking forward? Do we fear that maybe Burnham has too many plates she's spinning emotionally at this point? Everything from the Ash Tyler stuff, even though he's on the Discovery at this point, she's also going to be interacting with Georgiou, kind of reconciling those emotional issues that she's dealing with there.
She's also having this like existential crisis just being in the Mirror Universe, which we've never seen in the Mirror Universe. I thought that was kind of interesting. Her voiceover talking about how hard it is to live that way.
She has to play along because remember she had to like give the execution order for all those prisoners.
Yeah.
And it's like you'd usually expect an entire episode to be built around Federation members saying like, no, we cannot execute them and we'll find a way to save them. But Burnham was like, beam them out.
You didn't see Shatner having those sorts of moments in Mirror Mirror.
No. With this, you know, I think next week we're going to get a lot of Michelle Yeoh.
Yeah.
It's going to be cool to see her chew the scenery as well. And I just wonder if my fear, though, is at the very end of the episode, we do have Burnham reacting with just plate-sized eyes at the site of one Emperor Giorgio.
Right.
Yeah.
I hope she can pull herself together a little bit by the time she's interacting with the Emperor. The Emperor is not pleased with her.
No.
No.
So
well, she doesn't seem to be able to deal with this. Burnham doesn't seem to be able to deal with this mirror universe very well.
Right.
Yeah.
She can't really wrap her head around the fact that these aren't your crew members.
Yes. Yeah.
And so everyone's just this emotional turmoil for her.
And Giorgio, I mean, is interesting because she carries so much guilt.
Right.
Over the death of Giorgio. I mean, you know, do you think, we haven't seen obviously where this is going to go, but do you think that would make sort of a satisfying emotional climax of her having to deal with Mirror Universe, Giorgio?
Sure. I honestly don't feel that invested in their relationship. Mm-hmm. I wasn't a huge fan of Giorgio in the first two episodes, like I said. I think too.
Yeah, you weren't a lot of people didn't really care for the first two episodes, which are sort of the prologue.
And yeah, I didn't, and I didn't think Giorgio was anything special.
Right.
So I felt no connection. So this, I mean, if Burnham feels better, great. But
Cam, can we look forward to somebody having a badass cape like the Emperor does when we're in Las Vegas looking at all the cosplay at the upcoming convention in August?
I mean, I just want to see someone dressed as Cole with the cape.
Okay.
That's what I'm
as long as we
for.
Get some cape action.
Yeah.
There's also Stella's father who had the cape in Magic.
Yep.
So
I do like capes.
Capes in sci-fi, they're pretty badass. We know that Donald Glover will be donning a cape as Lando Calrissian in the upcoming Solo film.
Can't wait.
Can't wait for that cape. Yeah. Are you going to go dressed in a cape for the screening of that one, Cam?
I'm wearing one right now.
Okay. Makes sense.
Just counting the days.
Just confirming.
I got a countdown clock. Okay. Different cape every day.
One last note that I'll put out, and then if there's anything else you guys want to mention, but a 14-minute long teaser that we got here. When the main credits came up, you two both exclaimed, "What? I forgot about the main credits." And then we actually paused it and saw that it had taken 14 minutes since the hour started until we actually got to the main credits. I think that has to be a record for Star Trek at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I commented at the time that it reminded me of the Friday the 13th reboot, which had, like, I think a 25-minute, pre-credit sequence. And, the Na'vi Visitor features into that opening. Oh, so, yeah. You know, there's a Star Trek connection. It's not completely random.
Yeah.
But, you know, and they were really, like, advertising that in sort of the press. Like, we've got a 25-minute, intro. And, you know, when the credits popped up in this, I was like, oh, yeah, we haven't had the credits yet. It was kind of weird. I mean, I guess maybe there was no moment that made sense otherwise to cut in those credits.
Well, there's a couple beats where I was just like, no, maybe they'll do it now. That's fine. This episode is actually a little bit longer than usual because this is on my PVR because in Canada, we're actually the only country in the world that it actually airs on television as opposed to like Netflix or CBS All Access.
Yeah.
So you can get it on the Crave app here in Canada, but it's delayed by one day. For all those international listeners who are very concerned about
they're watching. Very concerned, yeah.
But what I did is I hit the button on the PVR to kind of figure out the timestamp there. And that's my story, guys.
Well, that's a riveting story.
Yeah.
I was going to say, though, about pre-credit sequences that are really long. Like, I wonder if that was initially the plan. Like, Janine, you know, you and I are big into, like, the Bond movies. Mm. You know, The World is Not Enough. The third Pierce Brosnan movie, no one's favorite. But that opening is something like 20 minutes long, and it features the whole boat chase on the Thames River. And originally, the opening credits were supposed to land, like, 5 minutes in after he went out the window after dealing with sort of evil bankers.
Yeah.
And they were just like, this is really flat. So they ended up keeping it all together, doing the whole Thames chase, and then throwing in the credits after that, just because it had more impact.
Yeah.
Maybe originally in this episode, the credits were supposed to come earlier, and it's just like, guys, this is just kind of flat as a teaser.
Well, and I think sometimes you would get that dynamic sort of feeling, but it throws you off a bit with a recap at the start.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, there's so
like
much voiceover.
Like, if we just, boom, we're into the episode, and just it's suddenly, like, so engorged in it, and then, the credits.
Although, question for, either of you, there was an episode, I think it was Magic to Make the Sanest Man Go Mad, where there was no teaser. They just opened with the credits.
Right.
Why,
yeah.
Why did they not do that?
The teasers are for fools. I don't know.
So, yeah.
But you know what? Most shows don't have teasers. I mean, network shows do, but like cable shows, it's just, here's the credits, and then you're watching the first act.
Right.
So I think this is maybe a vestigial kind of carry over from Star Trek's Days of Yore, where right. there always were the teasers.
Yeah. Except the animated series.
Oh, that's true. Okay. Yeah. So, guys, any little points that before we get into our weekly housekeeping, any points that we want to hit on before
there was
we,
just one little thing. I want to talk about the title, The Wolf Inside.
Yeah.
And
The Fire Wolf Inside.
Exactly. I never connected that. Like, you know, these titles have been really clever.
Oh, yeah.
Because then, you know, obviously because it's Voke and it's The Voke Inside, right? Like, when I heard The Wolf Inside and, you know, I read that title, I don't know, how many weeks ago when they revealed those? Right. Probably 3 or 4. When I read it, I immediately thought of the Metallica song of Wolf and Men.
Oh, okay.
And I was like, metal, man.
I was thinking more like, well, I was thinking 1980s, but like more like kind of Kenny G sort of like goes badass. Like, yeah. It's the wolf inside me. Yeah.
Janine, were you thinking hungry like a wolf?
That's yeah.
exactly what I was thinking. I didn't look it up till...
Cam, like... is that our closeout music for this episode?
Which one?
Hungry like a wolf.
Hungry like a wolf? Yeah. Maybe.
I didn't look up the title until about last week.
Right.
And then as soon as I read it, I went, oh, they're right about that fan theory.
So you picked it up from the title.
I picked it up from the title. And then in the episode at the start, in the voiceover, I think it was in the voiceover when she was talking directly to Ash and she goes, the darkness inside.
Yeah.
Like, and I was like, oh,
yeah,
that's weird. So having the wolf, the fire wolf or whatever.
Yeah.
And then twisting, it is, it's an interesting name.
Yeah,
but I did know right away when I read that. I said, oh yeah, that fan theory's right.
Do you think he gave the name to himself?
Yeah, oh, definitely. It's
a little like, you can't give yourself like real badass names, can you?
But I'm just like, how do you get that name? Like, what circumstance has to happen for it to be like, that's the nickname?
I think there's a torchbearer connection, you know, or he's following the light of Kailash. And he's, so there's the fire motif. I get that. Yeah. I don't know where the wolf comes in. Are there wolves kind of, on Kronos?
Well, Voke is kind of like a lone wolf character.
Oh, because he is the albino.
Yeah.
Okay. So, fire lone wolf? That doesn't really roll off the tongue as well. So, yeah, maybe just fire
wolf. Lone wolf McFlame.
Yeah, I like that.
So, he must have given it to himself.
He's got his own detective agency.
Works for Kurt for this week.
Yeah, it's, you know, what do you think came first? The name Firewolf or this episode title?
Probably this episode title.
You think so?
Yeah.
I bet you this episode was first called The Darkness Inside Me.
You think so?
I bet.
Okay.
And then they were like, we need a good nickname.
Right. Or they were listening to Hungry Like a Wolf in the office,
well,
and they're like, I
no,
got
but
it.
That's what they were like, we need a good nickname. Let's, you know what? Let's break for lunch when we come back.
It's like, I'm hungry as a wolf. And they're like, hey, whoa,
yeah.
What did you say?
And then like some guy's ringer went off and it was Hungry Like a Wolf. Yeah. And they're like, that's too many signs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then this guy's like, guys, write it down quick. I'm on fire with these ideas. And they're like, whoa. Put those two together. And he's like, wolf fire?
Nope, you're almost
close,
there.
Close. Think of the mirror version.
Oh, fire
wolf. Got it.
Break, gentlemen. We're done for the day.
I still like to think that Lone Wolf McFlame was a very close follow-up.
It was up on the whiteboard.
Yeah.
It had like an underline underneath it, just not two underlines.
Yeah.
Alrighty. Cam, we have a little housekeeping that we want to do here with some listener mail, perhaps?
Yeah. Okay, so we had some comments on a video we actually did this past week on Star Trek's Best Mirror Universe Moments. And most of the comments are in regards to the Discovery episode, Despite Yourself. So I thought we would just touch on those. So the first one comes from Kimberly, who says, I'm so excited for the rest of this season. The only thing that threw me off in this episode is the fact there are captains in the universe who look like they're just entering young adulthood. Never mind Captain Killy, that Captain Connor looks like he should be mowing lawns to save for a new bike. I guess having a bloodthirsty youngster in command is scary in its own way.
Well, was the Connor choice just because they needed somebody recognizable that they could kill off and have Burnham establish herself as the dominant force aboard the ship? Was that the sole reason why they went with a guy who's like probably 19?
Who else on the Shenzo would have fit this role?
The only other one you could get was Detmer.
Yeah.
And
I think they had obviously a little bit bigger plans for Detmer.
Yeah.
A little bit.
A tiny bit.
You know, having her as the first officer.
Yeah.
Well, and I think picking him because Burnham did feel guilt over him.
That's did she? True.
Yeah.
Yeah,
she did. So. She mentions yeah. him in another episode yeah. about it. So, I mean, I think that's at least one that when we see him again, we're like, oh, yeah. Well, I at least remember that she had guilt about him, so it made sense.
She also, she had to watch him get sucked out into outer space as yeah. well. So, yeah.
Yeah. No, I agree 100%. But what did you think of having him as a captain?
I thought
is
it
that was, terrifying?
I thought it was adorable. Yeah, you know, I just kind of wanted to like, you know, like muss his hair. You know,
did it look a little bit like dress up?
For, you know, kind of.
Yeah, maybe in the mirror universe they could be younger.
Yeah, because sure. you know what? It's the mirror universe. So when you're younger, that's when you're in command. It's all like 60-year-olds that are ensigns.
Yeah,
right. Yeah, so.
This is where it pays to not know Star Trek.
Right. Yeah. Okay, so the next comment comes from Mary, who says. And this is in regards to us picking the Emperor as being Georgiou. She says, I so agree with you guys. My pick, as soon as I saw the episode, even before it ended, I said the Emperor is Michelle Yeoh because of the Sato dynasty.
I don't know if the fact that the actresses are both of Asian descent means that there's a dynasty, you know.
Yeah, I mean, when you say Emperor, I think a lot of people immediately think of more like Asian cultures because, you know... That's, you know, the Emperor of Japan, of course. And to me, that's at least...
I don't think of, like, Italy?
No, I don't. No.
Really?
No.
That's the most famous... Okay, but that's you personally, though.
Yes, that is me personally. Okay. But that is what I'm saying.
I think of that guy that doesn't wear any clothes.
Oh, yeah, that guy. That guy. But, you know, and that sort of actually ties into the next comment. Paul jumps in and says, you know, he agrees with, you know, having Michelle Yeoh as the Empress. But he said it would be cool if it was Hoshi. There was a lot of people that were very excited for some sort of connection to Hoshi. You know, do you think that Discovery is going to find a way to connect these characters in some way? Because I think it's the type of thing where you can do it in a subtle way where fans can geek out over it. But it's obviously not going to be a plot point because new viewers, like Janine here, you know, probably don't care about hearing about Hoshi.
If they do, it would be something on, like, a screen, like, in the background that you have to, like, freeze frame and zoom in on it. Like, I don't think it's going to be anything significant. It'd be nice, like, little shout-out, because I think, like, one of our favorite moments, Cam, in the Mirror Universe is just seeing that Hoshi's been, like, killing it this whole time in the Mirror Universe, and she, you know, ascends with the help of the Defiant, you know, to take her... role as the new empress of the Terrans, which is cool, you know? So, with Georgiou doing the same thing. I mean, I want to hear more of Georgiou's ascent. Like, that's what right. I'm really interested in, so.
And I wanted to just touch on, sorry, this is the connection of having two Asian actresses being related. You know,
I don't know if I like going down this path.
Well,
I will just say,
I'm going to say, like, okay. In the old days, they would have. They would have done it. And I just don't think we exist in that era anymore where they would make that shorthand. And I think I don't think they would want to open themselves up to the controversy.
I appreciate that's what you're...
No, I was like, I was all for it. Yeah. No, I'm just saying, like, if you go back to the 90s, you know, definitely. They wouldn't have thought twice about it.
No, you're right.
But I think we just are in an era now where that's not going to be the choice. Even though maybe that is sort of the fan favorite choice, I don't think it's one they would want to open themselves up to.
Especially... considering the fact that these women and these characters are of entirely different nationalities.
Yes, definitely. You know, we are not in the days where they made that movie Memoirs of a Geisha. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just a different time. And I
wasn't
just don't
Michelle
think...
Yeoh in that one, too?
I don't remember. Zhang Ziyi was in it. I remember her. But, you know...
I actually saw that one in theaters.
Did you? I never saw it. But it was very controversial. Mm. I remember a lot of the, you know, criticisms of that movie.
Well, like, half the cast was Chinese.
Yes.
It's like, the movie takes place in Japan, guys.
Yes, and I just don't think you're going to see that nowadays in Discovery. I just don't think that's going to happen anymore.
Yeah.
But, I the idea is fun. Like, I totally acknowledge. I understand 100% why fans like the idea. And I think it says a lot about how well they did Mirror Universe Hoshi. That this character has a fan following.
Yes, exactly.
So, you know, I get it.
So, yeah, of course, guys, you can watch more of those videos. We've got so many. We're up to like 30 or 40, Cam. So keep watching those videos.
Per week.
Per week, yeah. Janine gets a big laugh out of watching them as well. So, I think you disturb your coworkers by...
It's a constant. I'm just calling everyone and I'm like, guys, I'm on my day. Come see this. Yeah. Come see this. Another one's come up.
They're curious about your chortling. So it's like,
But yeah, if you enjoyed this podcast, jump on over to our Facebook page where we'll have more, you know, videos this week, as well as blogs. You can find that at facebook.com/subspacepod. Tyler, what did you write on your blog for last week?
Oh, yeah, I did a comparison of Despite Yourself versus In a Mirror Darkly, which, of course, features one Empress Hoshisato. So that was a real fun one. And I actually dive deep into the whole concept of world building and how you have to do it so swiftly in these mirror universe adventures. And I seize on this one thing that I thought was genius on the part of the Enterprise producers, and that they revised the opening credits and gave it this mirror universe flavor, which was just awesome. And so, yeah, find out more on our blog as well. We've got links to it everywhere. So,
do you think a credit switch was ever on the table for this show?
Nah, just it made more sense in an adventure where you're not following any of the Prime Universe characters, as we got with Enterprise. And somebody online, you know, had floated the idea like, well, no, they're pretending like the viewers in the mirror universe. Right. And so this is why you've got like mirror universe credits, is because, you know, you, the viewer, are actually in there as well. So these are the credits you would see in the mirror universe, which I thought was pretty funny. So, Cam, what did you write about, though?
Yeah. So I wrote about the connections between Despite Yourself and the movie The Manchurian Candidate.
I didn't see any. Are you sure this is a viable topic?
They were a little subtle, but it's interesting to revisit that movie. It's from 1962. It's a John Frankenheimer movie. It's just fantastic.
There's a fantastic scene where Angela Lansbury goes, "Follow the light of Kalash. Whom do you seek?"
But there are, you know, you raise, you know, Laurel. The connections between Laurel and Angela Lansbury's characters are really interesting with the character played by Lawrence Harvey and then the Ash Tyler character. And so I dig into that, as well as just some of the other fun connections going on between those, between that film and that episode. So check that out. And I'm going to be trying to figure out what to do for this week. That's going to be interesting.
I think I kind of have an idea, but I may have already written about the episode. I need to go review my notes.
Yeah.
The fact of the matter is there's been like 750 episodes of Star Trek.
Yeah.
And the fact that I might be repeating episodes after 11.
Right.
We'll both have fun. We enjoy doing this, but it's just kind of fun to just kind of dig in and look at all the connections that we may not necessarily see. And so... I encourage everybody to check out the blog. We always post links on our Facebook page. Once again, that's facebook.com/subspacepod. facebook.com/subspacepod. Once more, Cam, facebook.com/subspacepod.
Okay, so next week we'll be back with a review of the next Discovery episode, Vaulting Ambition. And you can also find us on the Twitter. I'm at Cam V as in Broke Private R Smith.
You can find me at Reportin. That's REPORT. T is in tether. ON.
And Janine.
I'm good.
Okay. So until next time, the arena is closed.
Transfer complete.